Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and I wonder if any of you are going to have the courage to admit that you have participated in what I'm going to ask you. Don't worry, it's not going to embarrass you, I hope. But I wonder, have any of you, either now or in your past, ever been on a demo, a march? Yeah, one hand up. Oh, quite a few of you. Now, keep your hands up a moment. You might want to look around because you might want to have a conversation. Now, would any of you be really brave and just share what the demo was and why you went on it? Oh, great. Fantastic.
A demonstration against the Iraq War.
Demonstration against the Iraq War. Excellent, excellent. Let me run around here.
I went on dozens, but then I had no choice because I was policing them.
Oh! one over here. Couple more.
I expect quite a lot of people did who were in the church went on the Make Way March to declare Jesus many, many years ago in London.
Excellent. One more over here. Thank you. You're very good.
Protesting the genocide of the Nuba Mountain Christians.
Sudan, thank you. Any more? Yep.
A demonstration to drop the debt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do you remember the drop the debt, the Jubilee campaign? One more?
Cuts in local government services.
Cuts in local government services. I wonder, though, for you, those of you who have been on marches or demos, what they're hoping to achieve. It might be, just like we've just heard, the end to or to reverse a government decision or to change the way in which people think. But I do wonder sometimes that there are many on the marches who are there who don't really have an idea of why they are there. They just happen to have rocked up and joined in with what is ever going on at that moment. They find themselves swept up with the passion of the event. It's sometimes as if a crowd can take on its own personality. Any of you watch sport here, live sport? I used to take my middle boy Ruben along to he supports Chelsea or supported Chelsea. That is an absolute case in point. You see, when you go along to support a football match, you become more than yourself. You become part of the crowd. And suddenly you find yourself maybe acting in a way in which you wouldn't do if you're there by yourself. Sometimes you might find yourself even in front of the TV acting in a way in which you wouldn't do otherwise. My children will tell you that when I am watching rugby particularly, sometimes my emotions get the better of me. Of course, as we look back in history, we can think of some very famous examples of where the crowd has taken on changed the whole course of history. The Nuremberg rallies might be an example of that, where a crowd was used to manipulate the whole course of history. But at other times, of course, we find ourselves acting in different ways. I took my family to see Harry Potter at Christmas. Anyone seen Harry Potter and the Cursed Child? Just me. I really recommend it to you. But at the end, there was a standing ovation. And I don't know if any of you ever watched a standing ovation, what happens there. But normally what happens is that you get the really keen ones who are really kind of bold standing up first and making the first move. And then you see them doing it. Oh, well, if they're doing it, then I better join in. And if they do it, then and then suddenly everyone is standing. Very rarely does everyone stand at the same moment. Occasionally it happens, but normally one or two brave souls make that impact, make that decision to make that to stand up and say, "This was amazing." I wonder what was going on in that crowd in Jerusalem. I wonder, as Karen has already helped us to think about, what their expectations were. I wonder even what our expectations are as we look at this passage. You see, we may think we know about this day so well. And part of the challenge is that when we come to Scripture, we think we know what it is saying. And in fact, already today, we've sung some great songs. Really good songs. And they're really helpful. But they're already sharing with us what the author is thinking that day was all about. Mark is a really interesting author. Of course he is. He's one of the gospel writers. But he brings to us a particular angle on this day. And I'd encourage you, if you've got a Bible and you want to keep it open, that's a good thing to do. Because what we see when we look at this is actually maybe we read into it and actually we come with a certain expectation of what the text is saying, but actually it's saying something a little bit different. You see, we may think that this passage is all about Jesus. That the crowd had come to proclaim Jesus as king. But actually, if you look at this text, it's saying something a little different. See, the first thing that we need to understand is that they weren't going to Jerusalem to proclaim Jesus as king. They were going to Jerusalem for a feast. The feast, probably a feast of tabernacles. And they're waving palm leaves, not because they were proclaiming Jesus as king, but because that was tradition at that festival. And waving of the palm leaves is linked to the Feast of Tabernacles. And Psalm 118, why was this psalm being used? Is it just being used just because they've got nothing else better to do? Oh, that's Psalm 118, that's about right for today, isn't it? Actually, they were using it because this was a psalm that was traditionally used at this time of year. In their liturgical calendar, it was Psalm 118 day. And that was the expectation that the people went. They were going to Jerusalem to celebrate the feast, and Jesus came into the midst of them. Just to realize I've got to keep an eye on the time. See, my expectation is when I come to talk, that 10 minutes is just the introduction. So I'm having to change what I think, how I normally work. I wonder if the people in the crowd had any idea what they were doing or why they were there. See, Mark tells this story without comment. He places it in the middle of this narrative leading up to the cross. But he places the words very carefully. He is saying, I want you to join the dots. Here you are. This is what's happening. But I'm not going to tell you what it means. It's almost like a parable, isn't it? It's a story about perception that invites us into a deeper question. He plays down the size of the crowd. Later, you might want to look at the other gospel narrative of the journey into Jerusalem, because each of the authors is trying to tell us something different. Mark actually is wanting to tell us something about Jesus, his humility. It is not about him being king, it is about the nature of his kingship. He is changing the expectation of what kingship is. It's not about being triumphal. It's about having the humble power to save. And yet, in the midst of this, Jesus is in control. He's in control of what's going on. You see, as we look back, we can now see the deeper meaning. And we can see how the disciples understood what was beginning to go on. The crowd shout, "Save now." But they must wait to have their cry answered. They repeat, "Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, and blessed is the coming kingdom." But it will take more than participation in one happy procession to achieve that. See, just like those marches that you went on, the march in itself achieves very little apart from bringing it to the public attention. What makes a difference is what then happens after the march. What then makes a difference is what happens in those in the government. What happens is those people who takes the Jubilee campaign, for example, and presses on and presses in. Discipleship means following the man on the donkey, and it still does. I wonder what our expectations are of following Jesus. I wonder if we are caught up in the crowd. Are we going through the motions that we can say the right things? We can take our cross. But I wonder if there's any real change. See, it's really interesting in Mark's gospel how at the end it kind of just people just drift away. Do we sometimes just drift away into the shadows? We come together on a Sunday, which is great, but then by Monday, we begin to drift. By Wednesday, actually, there is very little difference between the way that we live and the person who lives next door. Our challenge is to ensure that we don't become so reliant on Sunday that we neglect our individual journey. See, Mark invites us to seek Jesus out. The whole point of Mark is he asks us this one question. If you turn back two pages, Mark builds his entire gospel around one verse. Mark 8:29, and everything centers on this. If you understand this verse, you understand it's a key to unlock Mark's gospel. Who do you say, but what about you, he asked. What about you, he asked. Who do you say that I am? That is the crux, the key to unlocking what Mark would ask of us this morning. How do we respond to Jesus? How do we grow? How do we decide to follow him? Last week at St. Paul's, we looked at the house built upon the rock and the house built upon the sand. Jesus asks this question: you will only be able to withstand the storms of life if you build your house upon the rock. And that means more than just following the crowd. So this week, as we journey towards Good Friday and Easter Day, our challenge is that we consider our own personal response to Jesus. What does Jesus call you to do? How does he invite you individually to serve? Individually to respond? Individually to risk? Individually to make that sacrifice? Mark asks the question, who do you say that I am? Who do you say that Jesus is? This is at the very heart of Palm Sunday. The clues are there. He draws the dots. But we need to ensure that we hunt out the answers for ourselves. Shall we?